Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you are in the world. Thank you for joining me for this week's edition of SMIE Consulting Midweek Roundup. It's Wednesday, April 17th, 2024, and today we're going to be answering three questions we've been hearing from international educators over the last 7 days. And first up, before we get to those questions, I want to say a particular shout out to those that have commented over the last couple of weeks. I haven't been on because of my travels to Latin America last 2 weeks. Now back in for the next day or so before I go out again to Thailand tomorrow afternoon for the IIE International Academic Partnership Program, where I'll be attending for University of Nevada, Las Vegas, along with one of my colleagues, Jake Thompson, Associate Vice Provost of Undergraduate and High Impact Education at the university. So we're going to be meeting with 28, 29 Thai universities next week in Bangkok and also Chiang Mai and Chiang Rai. Looking forward to connecting with some old colleagues in those areas, meeting some alumni from the university, and we'll talk more about that in next week's Live from Thailand. But as we do each week with our roundup, we take our questions that we answer here on the Midweek Roundup from our newsletter that comes out on Monday mornings. And for those of you who are watching for the first time here on Instagram, we're Instagram Live today, but unfortunately the way my screen is set up, it's only capturing the wrong part of my head. So about half of my head you might see. So thank you for at least listening to us on Instagram as well and watching half of my head, my right side, I think. So thank you again for making the roundup a part of your weekly international edification. For those that aren't aware, the newsletter that we put out each week, you can subscribe to that at our website, smieconsulting.org/subscribe. I've just dropped the link to that in the chat. You can also I'll drop the links to this week's edition of the newsletter called All the SMIE News Fit to Share. And in case you're wondering, SMIE stands for Social Media and International Education Consulting. So the email version you can subscribe to on our website, and we also have a LinkedIn version. That's where the greater majority of subscribers now receive our news. We're up to between the two versions of the email and then the LinkedIn version, we now have over 1,825 subscribers. So very excited about that growth of the newsletter. 20 to 30 new people each week are joining in, subscribing to the newsletter. So very much appreciate those of you who have made that a part of your reading each week. But that's one of the reasons we developed these two items for our international education friends. The roundup here on Wednesdays and the newsletter on Mondays, because I know how busy you get. I know very few people actually have the time and energy to watch this live on Wednesdays at 1 p.m. Eastern. So it's podcasted as well in an audio-only version. It's on demand on LinkedIn, Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube. So I really encourage you to, if you are at all interested in these topics but don't have the time to do all the reading and digesting, subscribe to the newsletter either on LinkedIn or the email version on our website. It's about a 10-minute read each Monday max. Our hot takes on 20 to 30 news stories in social media and international education, and oftentimes where those two overlap. We cover those in our hot takes there on Mondays. And then three of those themes that we see developing in the news stories, we cover in depth here on Wednesdays on the Midweek Roundup. So since it's been about 3 weeks since I've been on, I wanted to give a little refresher to those that are joining new, those who are trying to catch up and remember what we're talking about each week on the roundup. We'll get right into the questions, but thanks again for everybody for making us a part of your journey each week in our profession. So the first question of the day, what's up with WhatsApp for Business? So if you've been following what we do here at SMIE Consulting, you know, going back many years that we've been doing this podcast, the live chats here in podcast version, as well as newsletter version on Mondays, we talk about the six P's of strategic international enrollment management. And these are the six P's that I developed as sort of my guiding philosophy on international enrollment management issues, and how each of these P's, it's not a prescribed way of actually you have to do things this box, that tick all these boxes in order to make sure you're doing it right. And it's not a one size fits all. It's a set of principles, really, that make up the philosophy that I hold dear to how international enrollment management should be conducted. And when I say international enrollment management, I'm not talking about prospect to enrolled. I'm talking about prospect to successful alumni. And all those points in between, including the student experience on campus, are on how vital those are in connecting the dots all the way through that journey to make sure that international students are getting the information they need, getting the services that they must have in order to succeed, and then also being equipped for the time after they graduate and leave your institutions. So that's the philosophy of SIEM. The six P's that we talk about start with perspective, planning, platforms and partners, personalization, and peers. Those are the six P's. And today we're going to be talking about a couple of those P's. And one of those P's is platforms, being on the right platforms. Because in every environment that you can think of, from business to education, everywhere in between, the guiding principles in terms of that will lead you to success, one of the most important is having a presence where your audience spends their time. And that's why I call live where your audience lives. And I'm not the only one who said that, but I've been preaching that for the last 15, 20 years of how we as international educators can be better reaching students, future students, in the places where they spend their time by having a presence using the tools that they use to communicate. And it has gotten, it's changed dramatically over the years. It used to be letters that we would mail out back in the 90s when I started as an international admissions counselor, to eventually emails, which still dominate to this day from the late 90s till today, as a way that students want, you can send the same email to thousands of students at once. But that's changed too. You can personalize those messages. In the mid-90s, we started seeing the rise of social media as a way to get your message out in front of the right students. And part of that messaging that you need to be aware of is, you can be sending all the messages out on Facebook you want, but if the audience you're after isn't on that platform, then it's kind of wasted effort, isn't it? So it involves a lot of data analysis of where the young people in the countries that you're recruiting are spending their time online. And it has increasingly become almost exclusively online sites, social media sites, messaging sites, platforms where students get their information. We've talked about in the past how TikTok is now the most important search site for students these days. And that's a scary thought, isn't it? TikTok being the place where students are getting their information as opposed to Google. It's more significant for students in terms of where they get their information on and searching for information. They'll use TikTok to search rather than Google, over Google. Not that they're not using Google, but it's more prevalent that they're using TikTok. And that's a scary thing. But when it comes to communicating directly with students, you need to be on platforms and messaging platforms specifically. So you've gone from these social media platforms where you could broadcast a message out on a Facebook page or a YouTube channel that would be too many, one too many of your entire audience. But now the expectation is that it be more personalized. So we're talking about the personalization P, but we're also talking about the platform P here. And that is knowing which of the messaging platforms your students are on. And are you able to collect that information and then communicate to that group using a university account or even a personal account? Many recruiters I know, they'll use their personal WhatsApp to connect with students that they meet at college fairs in India or other countries, for example. And WhatsApp is not the only platform you can be on, but it is one of the most dominant messaging platforms in the world. Certainly outside of China, it is the number one platform, followed by, I think, Messenger. So that is something that you need to be aware of, where the youth of in the countries you're targeting are spending their time in terms of messaging. And knowing where they are, knowing that you can capture their information either on inquiry cards, QR codes that lead to inquiry forms that students are filling out, capturing a WhatsApp number or messaging app number that you can then turn around and build into a communication strategy that targets those students by messaging app. There are now platforms that are coming out that allow you to manage one-to-many or one-to-group communications using WhatsApp, including Synorbis. They've developed a kind of an Asia-specific WhatsApp platform that you'll be able to control messaging out to students as long as you've captured their contact details to begin with. So that is a real possibility. There is also, if you don't have the funds to go full on for a multi-source platform like Synorbis, and they're also offering Line and WeChat and other social media platforms, messaging platforms will be added as well. But there's also, if you just have WhatsApp, and India is a core market for you, as well as other countries in Latin America, for example, heavily WhatsApp friendly, having a WhatsApp for Business account is key. Now, here's the challenge. WhatsApp for Business is restricted to, is for basically verified accounts that can be for your institution or for international recruitment or international missions at your institution. And once that platform is set up, it's run through a desktop, so you can do the, you can manage that and your communication out to those students. Obviously, there needs to be a way to sync up with your CRM to pull the data for prospective students into the WhatsApp for Business, so you have the numbers that you need to then communicate out. And then you have the need to have the content. Obviously, content's a little easier because usually it's, thanks for meeting me at the fair, here's a link to our upcoming events, or if you need to do a virtual tour, or here's our application deadline information, here's our scholarship information, whatever. You can schedule all those out to the students that you've just met. So that's a real important tool. And if you can only afford to do one of these messaging platforms for business purposes, WhatsApp would be the one for me, because of India, because of other countries around the world, including most of Latin America, are on WhatsApp, students that you're going to be recruiting. Now, the question, as I mentioned earlier, is making sure you're tying that into your CRM, that you're capturing that information somewhere on your online inquiry forms, whatever that looks like for your institution. Make sure you have a way to funnel that into your CRM and then back out to WhatsApp for Business. Now, it can be a little bit clunky at first to manage it. It's not a breeze to understand, but our good friends at Inted have just last week had their first in a two-part series on WhatsApp for Business and how you can leverage that in international student recruitment. And that part one came out last week, and part two just came out today. And we'll drop a link to that that article in next week's newsletter. But you'll see this week's part one is already in the chat. So definitely take a look at that. I have to say the folks at Inted are some of the brightest thinkers in our field and problem solvers in our field when it comes to international student recruitment and marketing efforts to students overseas. They really have their fingers on the pulse and are ready to build custom programs to help you get your institution and its goals met when it comes to international student recruitment. Shout out to them. That's free advertising. I wasn't planning to give them a plug like that, but certainly have great respect for Ben and the team at Inted. So they're always a part of our regular newsletter each week. They put out some great content in their blogs, and we always refer to that here when the time is appropriate. So let's shift gears now and move on to our second question of the day. And this is, are universities making progress on internationalization? Now, a big question, obviously, not one that you're going to find a whole lot of easy answers to, and certainly no concrete answers that you can apply across the board to every nation. But one thing I certainly can say from this, and what I'm talking about today, is it's a Pi News article on an International Association of Universities global survey report. This is the sixth version of that we've had over the last two decades at least. Back to the 90s. So this survey is a global survey and not just a U.S. or Europe-centric survey. It is one that I think has a lot of value because it talks to a lot of issues in our field that we are often good for us as international educators to step outside our own bubbles. And this also is what I talk about in the first piece of the six P's called perspective, is having that global perspective. What are other nations doing regarding internationalization? What are their priorities? How are we different in the U.S. versus these other countries in terms of what we are emphasizing? So that there's some interesting data in this survey report. The survey itself went out to, was responded to by 722 higher education institutions in 110 countries and territories. So the Pi News article kind of lays out what those priorities are in the areas of the survey. The importance, benefits, and challenges to internationalization, internationalization governance, internationalization of teaching and learning activities, internationalization and teaching and learning of the curriculum at home, internationalization of research, internationalization and society, community engagement, and emerging issues and the future of internationalization. That's those seven different aspects that they were looking at. So none of those speak specifically to international student recruitment, but it's kind of embedded in one of the elements that they're mentioning there. So what did this data show? It's the first survey in 5 years. They didn't do one during the pandemic, so this is kind of covering that entire gap from pre to post pandemic, and it really reflects a really good breadth of obviously the 110 countries that have been represented in the survey. That one of the key findings is 77% of higher education institutions placed a high level of importance on internationalization. And that has increased over the last 5 years across all types of HEIs, including those in the Pi News article, including those who did and still do place a low level importance of internationalization. So everybody's increased, basically, in that five-year period. The article references some international thought leaders like Fanta'a at NAFSA saying that there is change. It's slow, but it's significant. And that's something that is certainly in her being in the field for 30 years that she and I have both been as former international students ourselves. Very different experiences, obviously, but it has. We never think it's moving as fast as it should. As international educators, we're always the ones pushing that boulder up the hill each day, and it's often very frustrating jobs at our institutions, depending on where we are. And the support we feel we have up the chain and across campus. But it underlies what I think Fanta talks about this, or the report actually mentions it, that there's an increased need to strategically connect with other HEIs globally. And that's part, and one part I certainly appreciate, given my role at University of Nevada, Las Vegas, as Director of Global Recruitment and Partnerships. I have that responsibility, and why I was in Latin America last week, and why I'm going to Thailand tomorrow for partnership building with institutions in other countries, because that is a priority for our institution to expand the research that we're doing through our faculty and our students, with not only on campus but with students and faculty on other campuses, partners of ours that share similar goals and missions. To develop a programming that can be capacity building for certain institutions. It can be faculty exchange. It can be faculty-led small groups of students to and from our campuses each year. Those are kind of core pieces of what we're trying to build. We're also looking at ways to internationalize the curriculum with COIL classes and other language offerings that we have, expanding opportunities for our students to go to China for language study. We have a Chinese minor on campus in our World Languages and Culture department, to have an Asian American studies program at UNLV. So there's some common elements for us that we can leverage in different parts of the world. So one of the things that I think where you see some disconnects happening in the global data, that not disconnects in terms of, well, that doesn't make sense here, but it's making sense there, is that what prioritization institutions are putting on SDG goals. For those not familiar, UN put out these sustainable developmental goals Sustainable Development Goals a few years ago, and many in the higher education community globally have taken those SDG goals on as priorities for how they plan strategically at their institutions. In fact, just this past week when I was in Brazil, I had the opportunity to meet with one of our future partners there, and they have the SDG goals spelled out on steps in one of their buildings on campus. So that's very much a piece of the larger puzzle that in other parts of the world, SDG goals are really driving a lot and are in sync a lot with internationalization efforts as an intentional process. So, but in the United States, less than half of institutions in the U.S. are using SDG goals and tying those directly to their internationalization priorities. So there are some disconnects in the United States. In terms of why we build, why we do internationalization in the United States, we are also, and Canada, and Mexico as well, we feel that increased global, international, and intercultural knowledge, skills, and competence for both students and staff is the most important benefit of why we do internationalization. Other parts of the world, it's enhanced cooperation and capacity building that are the most important benefits for them. In terms of what internationalization can do. So there are some differences there, and this does play into not only the realities of the Global North versus the Global South in a lot of cases in terms of brain drain issues that we see, particularly in Africa and other places, that we're just taking the best talent and they're not going home. That is one of the facts of how internationalization is developed, and a lot of countries, a lot of institutions are sensitive to that and trying to be more balanced in how they approach this and make most of what they're trying to do in their programming internationally bilateral and making it a two-way street, not just a one-way alley to send your students, send your faculty for research and advanced degrees. But you see what the needs are or why for many in the Global South that enhanced international cooperation capacity building is their priority, and that doesn't happen organically. They've got to make those connections with institutions in certain parts of the world that can help them achieve those goals of capacity building and in terms of international cooperation. International cooperation is not just U.S. to Asia, it's U.S. to every country in the world, and every country in the world to its neighbor, neighboring countries, not just to the U.S. or Canada or U.K. or Australia. It is a much bigger world than we realize, but we're also increasingly more connected, and it's easier to build these connections now. So I think the survey certainly points to, and I dropped the link to the actual survey itself in addition to the Pi News article, and I asked the question is, are institutions, universities making progress on internationalization? I also dropped in a link to a Forbes article written by current CEO of IIE, Alan Goodman. Actually, I've known Alan for going on 20 years now. And Alan is one of the bright lights, certainly a soft-spoken thought leader in our field, and one I've had the privilege of working for at IIE for 6.5 years. But I've really come to appreciate and respect his opinions on a lot of things. As the CEO of IIE for almost over 20 years now, he certainly has a lot of experience even before he joined IIE in international education, and has a lot to say. And he says it quite well, particularly in reference to the United States and how it's the best of times, the worst of times, that Dickensian kind of a theme that we see resonating with a lot of international educators, all the positives coming out of the pandemic and the resilience that we've seen. And Alan makes reference to that in his article. You also see him talk about the kind of long-term growth of international student mobility, particularly to the United States, that IIE's research team has determined is coming by 2030. So significant growth here in the U.S., a lot of factors moving in our favor in a lot of countries compared to a lot of other countries that are becoming more restrictive. But one presidential election can turn that tide pretty quickly, as we found out in 2016. So a lot of positives in Alan's article. I really encourage you all to read that. But we'll finish today with an important question of messaging. And this is another part of the P's that we talk about in the 6 P's. So today we've covered perspective. We've covered platforms. We've covered personalization, and ultimately the personalization piece is going to be referenced again here in this last question: is what are you not messaging your prospects about that you should be? And this is always a little bit of a dangerous question to ask and answer, but when it comes to messaging, we are often so focused at our institutions on our own campus's values. And this is also why perspective comes into play here as well. When your vision is so myopic on what is our institution good at, here's what you need to do to get in, here's what you need to do to get your I-20, here's what you need to do before you arrive for orientation. When that's the driving focus for every message that we send out, talking about the diversity of community and what the students can do on campus, financial aid that's available, all of that, that's just that student experience getting to campus, getting them in the door. The reality is what students want to know about, they come to you initially because of a quality of education that your institution has. Maybe they've known someone who's attended, you have a good program and something that they want to study. But ultimately, some of the deciding factors for destinations for these students that you have to be aware of, that these are things that they want to know about, are things that you don't ever really focus on in your messaging. And this is the tricky bit. This is the tricky bit that oftentimes when you think about why taking a full life cycle approach to international students at your institution, from prospect to successful alumni, not just to enrolled student, but from prospect at the beginning all the way to successful alumni. When you take that approach first, you think, okay, begin with the end in mind. This is something that my son learned in his elementary school. They did this seven practices of successful leaders. And this is one of those P's, begin with the end in mind. Or not one of the P's, it's one of those seven principles. So begin with the end in mind, that means, okay, what's the end? The end is you want to graduate successful students, not enroll students that meet academic criteria, can pay for their education, all that. That's the very front end of that process. But the goal is to enroll and graduate successful students that will become proud representatives of your institution and successfully employed and achieve all their goals in life, all of that. If that's your end, think about that as a reason why future students are wanting to come to you. And this is something that you certainly have seen an increase, an uptick in all the surveys, student surveys, is how important issues of post-study work, employment, and eventual paths to residency and citizenship are for students from a lot of parts of the world. They want to know if this is a realistic possibility. So this is not something, yes, everybody has a career services office, but very rarely are there career services data that speaks specifically to international students and their ability to get a job after they graduate in their field, which they have to do if they want to work in the United States. It has to be in their field. So that data really doesn't exist at a lot of institutions, mine included, yet. It will someday. But having that end of student life cycle thought in mind is one of those reasons that international students these days, particularly post-pandemic, they're concerned about outcomes. What's their return on investment? And for undergraduates especially, if it's not the student, the parents are certainly thinking it. If they're going to drop $100K or more on your institution for tuition, at the very least, they want to know what they're getting for that money. And that's something you need to be able to talk articulately about and make sure you're not just mentioning it after they get to campus and enrolled and go through the orientation program and talk to career services 2 years into their studies. This is something that you need to have upfront in your messaging about what the outcomes are for international students at your institution. And if you can't do international, do whatever by college, have some data that reflects what those positive outcomes will be. Otherwise, they're not buying in. And part of this involves not only knowing your own data, but also knowing the benefits that they have as international students. Obviously, international student scholar offices are going to be involved in the messaging to students, particularly as they're coming into the university, pre-arrival, pre-departure, all that kind of fun stuff, and orientation, and then thereafter. But they can also be great resources for you to talk about that value of, here's, as an international student in the United States, you get 1 year of post-study work in your field of study that you can start within, have to start within 30 days. That process can start within 90 days or 30 days of your graduation date. Then can last up to 13 months after you've finished. Or if you're in a STEM program, you can have up to 36 months of that work permission. So it's being able to articulate that, but that's a That requires not just a straight admissions language that you have going out, but you need to have that background for what the benefits for international students coming to the United States as a whole are, in terms of the quality of institutions, in terms of the diversity of our populations, in terms of the breadth of our country and geography and climate and population, all of those things. You need to be able to articulate. And then specifically for international students, talking about the opportunities for post-study work, because that's what many of them want, is the opportunity to practice their skills that they've learned at your institution before they go home, if they want to go home. But be able to talk about the values of benefits of a U.S. higher education for an international student. That's so important. So that's what we have for you today. The survey that I was referring to was conducted by AECC, was profiled in the ICF Monitor article that I dropped the link to in the chat. But do encourage you all to subscribe to our newsletter if you haven't already. Also, if you're a podcast listener, get the audio-only version of this SMIE Consulting Midweek Roundup on all your favorite podcast providers, Podbean, Stitcher, as well as Google and iTunes. So please do make us a regular part of your listening, and look forward to chatting with you in the weeks to come. And next week, I'll be live on the road in Chiang Mai, Thailand, for our Wednesday midweek roundup. So until then, we look forward to chatting with you then. Have a great day.